Hello and welcome to the KMXT Weekly Wrap, where we go over this week's news from Alaska's Emerald Isle. I'm your host, Catherine Irving. On this week's recap, Kodiak's waters could be offering gray whales a rare lifeline.
We're, you know, scanning the horizon, and it looked like smokestacks from all the whales breathing.
More on that story later, but first...
Support for KMXT comes from the Kodiak Area Native Association's Substance Use Treatment Team. Talk with your kids about drugs and tobacco. No matter how young children are, talking with them is one of the best things you can do to keep them drug and tobacco free. Learn more at kodiakhealthcare.org or 907-486-7380.
Two new Coast Guard icebreakers will be homeported in Kodiak. That's according to a press release posted by the U.S. Coast Guard on Thursday. A third icebreaker will be homeported in Seward when construction of supporting infrastructure in the town is completed. Senator Lisa Murkowski spoke about the announcement alongside Senator Dan Sullivan on a press call on Thursday.
This announcement today from the Coast Guard is not just cause for celebration for Kodiak and Seward. This is cause for celebration for the entire state of Alaska.
According to the release, the first of the icebreakers will arrive in Kodiak by the end of 2028. They're the second, third, and fourth icebreakers to be announced as homeported in Alaska. A previously announced icebreaker, built from a converted oil ship called the Storis, will arrive in Juneau in 2029. Arctic Security Cutters are a new class of medium-sized icebreakers. The vessels are the first of their kind in the United States, according to the press release, with a heavier focus on security than the Coast Guard's existing three icebreakers. Murkowski said during the press call that the introduction of the vessels is part of a greater push to expand the Coast Guard's presence in the Arctic. Particularly as the climate warms and Arctic ice melts, countries from around the world are expanding their icebreaker fleets.
It's actually just beautiful housing. It's state-of-the-art for the Coast Guard. I think it's state-of-the-art for the entire, all the military services, which is why they went with two.
Last year, President Trump approved the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, which allocated $25 billion to the Coast Guard, including nearly $9 billion specifically for the construction of new icebreakers. And according to a February press release, the Coast Guard has awarded contracts for 11 total Arctic security cutters. During Thursday's press call, Sullivan said that all 11 are slated for completion by 2035. Kodiak is the largest Coast Guard base in the United States. The island homeports half of the state's six cutters, and base Kodiak is set to receive two more offshore patrol cutters in the coming years. The base is also expanding its housing capacity in preparation for additional personnel. Sullivan said that Kodiak's housing was a key part of the decision-making process. Seward is also in the process of building capacity for more Coast Guard activities. One of Kodiak's offshore patrol cutters will also be going to Seward when additional housing units are finished with construction. Next up, summer is approaching, and the crew at Alaska Department of Fish and Game's Kodiak office are working all across the archipelago to set up weirs and field camps. This is the first summer season for Ben Daly, the new supervisor for the Division of Commercial Fisheries Westward Region, in his new role at the Kodiak office. KMXT sat down with Daly last month and has this report. I kind of wanted to start with your current job and how long have you had that job?
I work for Alaska Department of Fish and Game in the Commercial Fisheries Division. And here in Kodiak, we're the headquarters for the Westward Region, which means the waters around Kodiak, around the Alaska Peninsula and the Aleutian Islands and the Bering Sea for crab fisheries. So I started this job in October of 2025. So I'm very new to my role still. My background doesn't have much salmon in it. So I'm learning a lot about how the salmon fisheries are managed throughout the state, but specifically in the Westward Region.
From what I understand, do you come from a research background? Is that correct?
Yeah, I do. I was educated in Alaska at UAF. I have a master's in marine biology and a PhD in fisheries. And so just naturally in that course of education, you get involved in research. And so I got up my PhD in 2012. I had to think about that for a minute. And then got a job with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration here in NOAA's here in Kodiak at the Shellfish Assessment Program on Near Island, and worked there for about 4 years. And then in 2016, got a job with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game as a research supervisor there, a research coordinator in shellfish. And so stuck with crab. during that period. And then that led to my my current position as regional supervisor.
How is it to transition from, you know, being in research to being in sort of like a manager coordinator position?
You're sort of in the weeds in research. And in my current role as a regional supervisor, I almost looking at the landscape from a 30,000 foot view. So I have a much broader perspective of all the things that are going on. So I think the big difference is that broader perspective, and which has given me a really strong appreciation for all the important work that the agency does.
What about Kodiak is unique in terms of, you know, what you're doing now, what you're doing for research?
One of the things I love about Kodiak is that it's a working town and it's heavily reliant on the fisheries that are in the surrounding area. And that aspect of being kind of at the epicenter of all of that fishing activity is exciting, especially when you're in the field that I'm in, which, you know, fisheries research and management. It's like where you want to be. You want to be at the heart of all the action. You know, it makes the job of kind of research and management of these fisheries meaningful.
What are some of your priorities now that you're in this position? What have you been really wanting to work on?
I'm really excited about being more exposed to the management of salmon fisheries and learning about all of the nuances that these fisheries entail. My approach to this new position as regional supervisor is kind of more of a supportive role. Our region has some pretty incredible talent in it already, in its researchers and managers. And so I see myself as making sure that these staff have what they need to do their job and then stay out of their way.
What is kind of, from your understanding, like the feeling about going into the summer?
I know the area management biologists and the staff in their groups are very eager and excitedly setting up field camps. You know, we've got a series of weirs on Kodiak Island and on the North Peninsula, on the Alaska Peninsula, that monitor escapement for many of the streams. We never quite know how these seasons will shape up. It's a big ocean, a lot of complicated processes that drive abundance fluctuations, but we're optimistic and hopeful that we have strong fisheries this season.
What are you hoping for the next few years that you're able to get done or that you hope happens?
We've got some exciting research projects that are kind of spinning up that I haven't really talked about. You might be aware, a pretty substantial population collapse of Bering Sea snow crab that happened between 2019 and 2021 that resulted in fishery closures for 2 years. Because of that, there's some federal disaster research dollars that have been coming into the state. So there's a series of research projects that are spinning up that are exciting to sort of get going on. You know, I think that's one thing that our agency and the industry have in common. We want the same thing. We want strong, healthy, sustainable fisheries. And I'm excited to see the next couple of years. And, you know, we're hoping for the best. We're hoping for strong salmon runs and healthy populations of crab and shellfish and groundfish. And so we're eager to see what the future holds.
That was Ben Daly, the supervisor for the Division of Commercial Fisheries, Westbird Region, speaking to KMXT. Next up, Coast Guard Base Kodiak is planning to begin the fourth and final phase of its member housing expansion later this year. That's after roughly $82 million to build more than a dozen duplexes was awarded to a contractor for the project last month. KMXT's Davis Hovey reports.
At Nimitz Park, a couple miles away from Coast Guard Base Kodiak, 25 brand-new modern-looking duplexes stand among the remnants of a construction zone. These 3-to-4-bedroom housing units were built by Perini Management Services, a Massachusetts-based company, over the last few years to provide homes for 50 Coast Guard members and their families. Tyler Vieira is a construction manager for the Coast Guard and has been overseeing the housing expansion at Nimitz since 2023.
We always had planned for there to be additional development on the site, so there it's segmented.
Now Perini is building another 15 duplexes in Kodiak with a price tag of more than $70 million, totaling 80 new housing units for Coast Guard members and their families. Vieira says this multi-phase housing project was planned out in advance to accommodate the recently commissioned cutters and their crew members.
And in the pretty much the same style as our previous. So this is considered the fourth phase of a four-phase project to build enough housing for the crews. The total, not necessarily for the individual crews' families, but for the total plus-up at Base Kodiak.
Three brand new fast response cutters are currently based in Kodiak, but in the coming years, Base Kodiak is also slated to homeport two yet-to-be-built offshore patrol cutters, which come with 100 crew members each. The buildup of housing and infrastructure, which Vieira has described as a general plus-up on base, began in 2022 with money from the bipartisan infrastructure law. But the largest ever one-time federal investment in the Coast Guard, $25 billion from the One Big Beautiful Act, is helping to fund the current work. Vieira says this final phase of the housing project is being funded with the first portion of that pot.
You know, our project takes a long time to get from its planning stages to out the door to an award. So in the near future, there will be more, but this is just the first of that.
The last of the new duplexes at Nemitz are expected to be completed in 2029, according to Vieira, just in time for the arrival of two new offshore patrol cutters. But beyond that, Vieira says it's likely that additional Coast Guard housing will need to be built in Kodiak.
We're going to bring a vessel somewhere. We're going to look at how many plus-ups, both on the crew support side and what that would mean. A place like this where there isn't a lot of houses available in the economy, that will typically mean we'll need to build Coast Guard-owned infrastructure.
And U.S. Senator Dan Sullivan of Alaska already hinted on social media last month during his visit to Kodiak for Crab Fest that more Coast Guard assets are coming.
Biggest Coast Guard station in America right here in Kodiak, and guess what? I'm going to be making it bigger. Announcements to come on more assets coming to this great community.
A spokesperson for Senator Sullivan did not respond to KMXT's request for comment. Meanwhile, the city of Kodiak and the Kodiak Island Borough are jointly pitching Coast Guard leadership this month to homeport more vessels in Kodiak. The federal government recently announced that two Arctic security cutters will be coming to Alaska, but did not commit to where in the state. Those vessels will be built in Finland and are part of 11 total such vessels that will be constructed in the coming years. The first two are anticipated to be completed in 2028, potentially even before the offshore patrol cutters make it to Kodiak. Reporting in Kodiak, I'm Davis Hovey.
Next up, summer survey season is underway, and the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration is studying the bottom of the ocean around Kodiak. The organization says it's aiming to make the waters around the archipelago safer. KMXT reports. Every year, NOAA picks locations around the U.S. to conduct hydrogeographic surveys. The surveys use sonar to measure the terrain on the bottom of the ocean or other waterway, creating data that NOAA can use to make maps. Caroline Wilkinson is the Alaska Navigation Manager with NOAA's Office of Coast Survey. She says the office has had a particular focus on Alaska recently.
Alaska has a tremendous amount of marine resources that can benefit both the state and the country as a whole. And we are very nicely situated as we look to the Arctic and potentially more activity that is going to occur up there.
This summer, NOAA has its sights set on two bays around Kodiak. Alatak Bay, which is situated near the village of Akiak on the south end of Kodiak Island, and Aishit Bay, located off the southeast side of Fognak Island. According to NOAA, these bays haven't been surveyed since the 1930s. Wilkinson says it's important to get updated data to keep people safe, especially since the area around Kodiak can be very rocky.
Because there's so many fishing vessels, the Alaska State Ferry, cruise ships coming in and out, the last thing that anybody wants is someone to hit an underwater structure and have some kind of fuel release or a situation in which life or property is in danger.
A fishing vessel called the Sea Urn ran aground in Aishit Bay last September, spilling thousands of gallons of oil into the waters near Katoy Bay Hatchery. Wilkinson says that incident informed their survey.
We are investigating the area where the fishing vessel Sea Urn ran aground, and we will pass those results onto the Coast Guard as part of their investigation.
Alatak and Aishit Bays aren't the only areas around Kodiak being surveyed this summer. Wilkinson says NOAA has also investigated the Kodiak Seamount, which is located deep in the Gulf of Alaska off Kodiak Island. Seamounts are massive underwater mountains formed from old volcanoes. They're critical habitat for fish nurseries and usually form around tectonic plate boundaries. Wilkinson says the project's goal is to map the area around the seamount so they can be prepared for natural disasters. Tectonic plate boundaries are hotspots for underwater landslides and earthquakes, which can cause tsunamis. Some of the work is already done. Wilkinson says the NOAA ship Fairweather completed its survey of Aishut Bay and the Kodiak Seamount in May, and the NOAA ship Rainier will be headed to Alitak and possibly back out to the Seamount in August. She says they're in the process of analyzing the data and that it should become available to the public within the next year.
If you see us out on the water, please feel free to hail us on Channel 16 and say hello. And we do stay out of the way of any fishing operations because we wouldn't want to affect anyone's livelihood.
Wilkinson encourages mariners to download the most up-to-date charts and report any uncharted hazards they find out on the water to NOAA. Reporting in Kodiak, I'm Catherine Irving. Last up, gray whales have been dying off of the coast of Washington State at alarmingly high rates this year, and the summer migration season isn't over yet. Scientists are racing to understand what's causing the die-offs, but they think it might be related to climate change. And as KMXT reports, the waters in the Gulf of Alaska might be offering the population a lifeline. Matt Van Deel remembers the moment he first noticed something was different about the gray whales near Kodiak. Van Deel is the natural resources director at the Shunack tribe. It was the middle of last summer, and he thought he'd drive a few minutes to check how many gray whales had arrived in their feeding grounds off of Passagshack Bay, which is at the south end of the island's road system. He was expecting to see a handful at most. Instead,
we're, you know, scanning the horizon, and it looked like smokestacks from all the whales breathing.
Soon after, Van Deel arranged to go out with a Coast Guard plane to survey the whales from above.
And that's when it really, getting up in the air and being able to see, you know, 100 to 150 whales right there.
In the following months, the number of whales near Passagshack Bay grew to nearly 300. Before last year, the average number of whales in the area was between just 25 and 30. Van Deel says so far, it's looking like they'll see high numbers again this year. And he's not the only one who's noticed more gray whales than normal. Lauren Wild is a research biologist and assistant professor of applied fisheries with the University of Alaska Southeast, Sitka campus. She grew up in Sitka, and back when she was a kid, she says there were maybe 10 or 15 whales coming through the sound every year to feed. But in 2020, that changed.
When I was out collecting herring eggs, I counted just sort of skiffing around with a friend, so not an official number, but I counted close to 200 individuals.
She says those high numbers have remained the norm in Sitka since then. These shifts in places like Kodiak and Sitka are happening as the gray whale population at large is tanking. Gray whales were hunted almost to extinction in the early 1900s. Hunting bans helped the population recover until around 2019. That's when scientists started seeing more dead gray whales than normal and fewer calves being born. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration designated it as an unusual mortality event. NOAA announced the die-off was over in 2023, when the population looked like it was recovering. But with the amount of whales that have been dying off the coast of Washington State this year, scientists think they may have celebrated too soon. Carly Lowe is a marine mammal specialist with NOAA's Protected Resources Division.
In 2024, there were a total of 61 gray whales stranded along the West Coast. Last year, there were 179, so almost three times as many. And this year so far, we're at 127. And we're not done with the season. They are still stranding in Alaska, so we expect that number to go up.
Scientists from Baja, Mexico, all the way to Alaska, gathered on a video call last month to share what they've been learning about gray whales and what could be causing them to die. John Kalambokides is a co-founder and research biologist at the Cascadia Research Collective, a Washington nonprofit that studies marine mammals.
The Arctic is an area that has seen, you know, over multiple decades, you know, pretty dramatic ecosystem changes. And where some of the areas gray whales feed that are monitored, there's been dramatic declines in the prey abundance.
He says the leading theory is that warming water in the Arctic, caused by climate change, has led to a massive drop in the available food out in the Bering and Chukchi Seas, where gray whales typically bulk up in the summer. Van Deel, from Kodiak, was on the call last month, too. He says, comparing notes, one thing was clear. Gray whales are showing up in places they don't usually go. The waters off San Francisco and Vancouver, British Columbia, for instance, have seen way more gray whales than previous years, just like Kodiak. He says this is probably because of the conditions in the Arctic. With nothing to eat at their normal buffet, the whales are looking for new grub.
They're very intelligent creatures. They're individuals, and so they're going to go where the feed is.
But not everywhere has the same type of food source. In San Francisco Bay, scientists estimate that at least 1 in 5 gray whales are dying there from starvation or boat strikes. But in parts of Alaska, grays are leaving with their bellies full. Wild and Vandale both say they've seen many whales in noticeably better body condition at the end of their stays than at the beginning. Scientists still aren't sure what other impacts this shift will have. In some places, like Sitka and Puget Sound, Climacides says they could see more conflicts between whales and fishermen. In Kodiak, Vandale says their impact could be more positive.
We'll probably see a rebound and a bloom of species richness out there because of the gray whale's presence.
He says that in a season of abysmal news for grays, places like Kodiak offer a rare bright spot. Reporting in Kodiak, I'm Catherine Irving.
If you or someone you know is having thoughts of suicide or experiencing a mental health or substance use crisis, 988 provides connection to free, confidential support. There is hope. The Lifeline works. For 24/7 confidential support, just call, text, or chat 988. This message is brought to you by the Kodiak Area Native Association.
If you enjoy the podcast and want to support local news centered around the Kodiak Archipelago, make sure to donate to KMXT. Just go on our website at kmxt.org and click the donate button in the top right corner of the page. And that's it for this week's edition of the KMXT Weekly Wrap. Again, I'm your host, Catherine Irving. We'll be back next week. Thanks for tuning in.